Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com. Spurs in full cry here.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. My name's Windy, and I'm joined by my sidekick and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy and robo-mod, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
I believe my stock response to that is beep boop.
Yeah, we've been there before, haven't we? Why am I referring to you as robo-mod?
Because the Extra Inch Discord has gone through some dramatic transformations in the last week. The season ended, and suddenly the Discord became a party zone. I think because of the relief that the season was over, and the activity has dramatically risen. And I've had to employ the services of a robot moderator to handle the misactivities of the children involved. But what they've discovered is that the robot mod can play music, so now it's like it's a DJ, and that just creates more chaos. So, yeah,
I've got a question on mods. Do you think there will ever come a time where a robot mod could manage Tottenham Hotspur? That this thing, just like Abby created for football, for Fantasy Premier League, that it could just review how the players are training. So you still have coaches, but it would just look at how the players are training, sense how their body is moving. It would sense like the hormones as well. So it would know how they're feeling. And then it would just say, pick these guys. And then literally all the coach has to do is just hand them the t-shirt. Do you think we'll ever come to, because we don't have a manager. So maybe this is Tottenham breaking new ground of innovation of employing a robot manager.
So I think you could definitely replace your whole physio team with AI, like pretty much. And I also think you could employ tech to identify weaknesses in the opposition's tactical approach in real time.
Oh, that
in the
that
very
happens.
Near future.
That yeah. happens. That's the thing.
Interesting. Okay.
I mean, it would be quite.
You've got
cheap.
To interpret the data, though, right? You still need someone there to interpret. And this is why, like I say, you can replace your physio team, but you still need a human being to interpret data and pass the messages on effectively. I think.
Okay. So you don't think it's going to happen, do you? You just shut me down. It'd be quite cheap to get rid of. You wouldn't have to.
You just reinstall a new operating system.
Again, I think it'd be worth it just to see certain parts of Koi's Twitter really react to a laptop. An actual laptop being in charge of the club. Just for that.
I like it. Nathan, in terms of the robot moderator on the Discord, good work. can I ask you just to sort of tighten it up around some of the behaviour, particularly that Jam Scones character? Really troublesome.
I find an excuse to warn him every day to try to tighten the leash on him a little bit, but
unbelievable, that
he's
guy.
Rabid.
Unbelievable. Yeah. He's the most chaotic of the chaos people. 763 X subs now. This is why Discord's gone so wild. I think we had an influx of new subscribers, and it's been great. Like, what's really nice is that we've got an introductions channel, and it's really nice to get to know people and understand their sort of Spurs journey and where they live in the world and what they do. And we've got a thing in there about their pets and what kind of food is eaten local to them. And it's really nice. So let's start off with some Pochettino chat, because it seems to be the discussion of the moment. So Morgan C says, question for the pod that I guess will be moot if Poch gets ruled out, but I'm seeing lots of talk about what Levy will need to have learned about clearing out players, etc., for them to work together again. But what will Poch need to have learned, and has he? My heart is 100% Poch back, but I'm trying to be honest with myself about how annoyed I'd gotten with him during the miserable period of Sissoko in a diamond and all of our youth players disappearing, and wondering how he would have changed his thinking since he left, or perhaps he doesn't need to, and it was all Levy's fault. Bardi, I've got a feeling that you might be... I think you might quite like that question.
Yeah, well, the thing is, I'm not Poch... How would you say it? I'm not Poch back in. So, yeah. So, maybe Poch back out. So, I don't want him back. Just because at Tottenham, we spend so much time thinking about what was, and we always end up trying to move forward by going back to what was nice and comfortable. We've seen it recently. Like, we re-signed Klinsmann when we got in a bit of trouble. We've gone back to Teddy Sheringham. We've gone back to Defoe. And I think it's probably worth at some point in the future going back to Pochettino, but I think maybe this is still... It's still too close, and my heart still remembers the way it ended. And even though there were some brilliant moments there, and he completely changed how we played as a football club, and we completely changed totally as a club, I'm just not ready for him to come back yet. I think we need a new manager to take us forward, and one that we can all get behind. Because at the moment we're already a little bit split on Pochettino coming back. So I think we need a manager that can galvanize us and not have the history that Pochettino has with us.
Okay, it's interesting. You're not keen on Poch coming back, but Nathan ran a poll on the Discord, and the question was, who would you prefer to be Tottenham's next manager? And you gave the opportunity, Nathan, for people to select multiple managers, mm-hmm. and see where it came out. And Pochettino was top, actually, by 9%. Graham Potter was in second, Erik ten Hag was third, Antonio Conte was fourth, and Brendan Rodgers was fifth. Nathan, where are you on this question of what Poch would have need to have learnt in order to make things better the second time round?
Yeah, I mean, he's not a manager without his weaknesses or points of frustration for the fans. I think that it's been a good year for players going out on loan is sort of an obvious one. One of the things kicking around in reports, and obviously the latest reports are that PSG aren't going to let him go. But prior to that, one of the reports was that one of his conditions is he would have complete control over transfers. And I think that that's probably really bad. I don't think that is learning from lessons at all. I think that is using the situation to gain control. I think Pochettino is good at a lot of things within management, but I don't have, from what I can tell, a huge amount of respect for his sort of talent identification within or without outside of the squads. So that would be a point of concern if Levy just says, well, I need to get him back in order to do that, I'm happy to hand over some power. Because I don't think that's necessarily good allocation. I think that, you know, a sporting director makes much more sense to have those kinds of reins. So that for me isn't a good sign that there have been positive lessons learned. Now, I still think that makes him, you know, one of the best choices out there regardless, because it's not like we're in a great position with our transfers as it is. I think we're in an okay position. I think there are clubs who do things a lot worse than us. And I also can't see Levy giving everything over, of course, but probably a bit more. Will Pochettino will he be more happy to loan out young players? He's not going to start, you know, making subs earlier like fans want him to, or things like that. What else is he guilty of? Playing Kane in finals when he comes back from an injury, but like that's what everyone either side of him, you know, is always going to do. What are your points of frustration? What lessons are you hoping he's learned?
So I wrote a short thing about this at the weekend. Actually, I had a really good conversation. I was on the Wicked Spursy podcast. They're based in Vermont. I had a really good conversation with those guys, who were super friendly, by the way. And do listen to their pod if you get a moment. But just to sort of reiterate some of the points I made there. I mean, I was very frustrated about the Winks Sissoko midfield under Pochettino. And I appreciate that was down to a combination of reasons, mm-hmm. like player recruitment, which you've already covered, being a big one. But that was an awful midfield, and he just kept trying to make it work, and it didn't work. And it was incredibly frustrating to watch someone be so stubborn and not learn from mistakes. That won't be an issue this time around, because it looks like at least Sissoko will be on his way out, probably Winks too. Plus, he has Huibier, Lo Celso, and Ndombele at his disposal. I mean, obviously, he had Lo Celso and Ndombele at his disposal before, but they weren't the same players they are now in terms of how acclimatized they are to the league and how fit they were, particularly in the case of Lo Celso. So I don't think that would be an issue second time round, but I definitely think there needs to be some concessions. I think the youth players is the obvious one. Aside from his first couple of seasons, I feel like he didn't manage our youth at all well, and I would want to see him completely give up the aspect of managing the youth. So it seems like Ryan Mason is the person in charge of fixing loans and whatnot at the moment. Whether he continues in that role or not, I definitely want the role to be filled, regardless of whether Poch comes in. And I think it's really important that someone who does that with and has oversight of the development of the club's young players post-academy, post-scholarship. So that's a big one for me. But yeah, I mean, he definitely was very stubborn. We saw him be stubborn. He'll have to change the way he interacts with the domestic cups, I think. And Bardi, that was a real bugbear for you as well, the cups, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just all those missed opportunities. And just had he collected a couple more trophies, I know we keep talking about this bloody word, but had he done that, then this whole reign of him would have been seen differently. And I was honestly quite surprised at how pro Poch back you were, especially after he just literally murdered the career of some of your favourite, you know, Edwards is what is about to be signed by Sporting Lisbon. So there was definitely a player there, and, you know, Carl Walker-Peters and Skip, those kind of guys. But at least Skip got rescued before it went too far. But I think more than anything, I'm just a little bit tired of talking about Pochettino. How much more is there to learn? How much more is there to say about Pochettino? He's not going to come back and all of a sudden change his footballing style. I mean, I'm ready for a little bit of a change. And maybe that's just me on a personal level. There's part of me that says, oh, maybe if Kane goes, it will get exciting, because for sure we'll have something else to talk about. But if we get a new manager, if Conte comes in, all of a sudden, do you remember that buzz when Jose came in? And it was a buzz because all of a sudden it was something new and shiny. It turned out that the toy was faulty and needed to be recalled. But if we get Conte in, can you imagine how exciting it's going to be those first few weeks, trying to see what he does and waiting the summer and seeing who he buys, and then the first game of the season. Even though part of me, the romantic in me, is that first home game of the season, everyone's singing his magic, would be lovely, but it would be nice just to see something different and see Spurs try and progress. Because even though Jose was the wrong manager at the wrong time, you could kind of see what they were trying to do. There was some logic in Daniel Levy's decision, in his thought process. So I would like to see that repeated this time. I would like to see us go in on Rodgers or a Conte or even Ten Hag, let's try something different.
Can you tell us a little bit about Conte, Bardi? I mean, obviously we saw him at Chelsea and he was very successful, and then less so, but he was very successful initially. He always strikes me as a manager who needs a lot of money to spend, wants work with players of his choosing rather than the players already at a club. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he's very wedded to his style. And when he tries to deviate from his style, it doesn't work. So those early months at Chelsea, where he was trying to do something other than a 3-5-2, 3-4-3, or however you want to call it, it was painful. And this season at Inter started terribly. They even crashed out of the Champions League, which is very typical Inter. But it wasn't until he reverted back to what he knows best. He almost like he tried to modernize himself. He signed Kolarov from Roma and tried to play him as a ball-playing centre-back to kind of make him a bit more interesting and more ball-progressive, and that didn't work, of course. I mean, you know, Kolarov would never be a centre-back. But he is a fantastic manager, and I remember he took Italy to Euro 2016, and that was a ragtag Italian team. It was probably one of the worst in my lifetime. I mean, even the team that Ventura drove into a tree for 2018 was better than that. And he took us to the quarterfinals and within a penalty shootout of getting past Germany. And he does that by like managing the players, getting them to buy into what he's doing and being very strict on his tactics and playing the 3-5-2, 3-4-3 sometimes in possession. And he's a very abrasive coach for sure, which is strange when you hear about him possibly going to Real Madrid. I'm not sure those players would be ready for it. But I think at Tottenham, perhaps we need that kind of modern kind of dictatorial manager, but with a modern twist and someone who plays good football. I think he could be great at all. It wouldn't last long because he doesn't seem to last long anywhere. But for 2 years, 2-3 years, I think it would be great for us.
So we talk a lot on this podcast about sort of possessional structure, and Conte, along with Sarri as well, are managers who take sort of the structure to the extreme. It goes beyond structure into sort of pre-scripted maneuvers, right? And it's a lot of cones on the pitch. It's a lot of training drills and repeated patterns and sort of unconscious decisions, right? And also like achieving certain, so like you play back to the keeper because you know where everybody plays from the keeper, and you play over to the wing back because you know the two or three different patterns that you play in from the wing back, right? And it's lots of bouncy one touch passes up through the middle and stuff like that, because again, the number six receiving with his back to goal doesn't need to receive and then look and then think and then play. He knows that he plays the pass to his left first time, and because he knows that the player to his left is there to receive first time, and then he's going to play his own, right? So there's a whole bunch of that. And short to medium term, you know, 1 or 2 years, it's really, really effective. It's not bad to watch at all. Defensively, they don't press. Conte teams don't tend to press especially high. They tend to drop off into medium and low blocks, and they don't mind sort of seeing games out in that way. They don't feel a need to have more of the ball than the opposition. But when they do have the ball, they play some fairly aesthetic and quite effective possession football. The downsides of this method are twofold. One is that teams know what you're going to do, right? If they are preparing for you, they're watching the games you've played, Conte's been in this league before. You can go away and watch Serie A matches. So his patterns are known, and he's going to change up. He's going to tweak them. He's going to change them for the players he has. But there's only so much tweaking that's really possible to go on when you're sort of ascribing plays in this manner. So teams can prepare, right? If the number six receives it, and every time he always plays immediately to his left, we sneak a man who pushes up to the number six's left as he receives the ball, that kind of stuff. And the other thing, just as important really, is that it's not all that fun to train for 2 or 3 years, right? If you're doing the same drills over and over again, and okay, again, there are tweaks because now the number six is going to play to his right or whatever and stuff like that. But it's lots of sort of fairly uncontested, uncreative, all the thinking is done for you training. And I think that just wears on players, and they lose interest in training that way. Fairly understandably, because they want to express themselves with their football rather than just be morsels for Conte to dictate his football through. So those are the upsides and those are the downsides. I think, yeah, if we want to play good football and be good for 2 years, Conte's there. I think that we probably need something more foundational than Conte, but I'm not going to say that, like, if we did sign him, it would be a failure. Not at all. I think that we want to be in a slightly stronger position. I think that if if we brought in Conte instead of Mourinho, and also the squad was in a slightly stronger place, that would have been a pretty smart way of doing things. But at this stage, we want something more, probably more long-term thinking. And again, you have to, when you sign Conte, you have to say, this is a manager we're going to have for 2 or 3 years at maximum. We need to build our squad knowing that it's going to be a new manager in a couple of years' time. We need to hand over power and money to him with that understanding as well. And the thing with Conte, of course, as Buddy's already alluded to, is that he's going to demand more than you're willing to give him, especially if you understand those limits. So I think for chairman and for board members, he's a difficult man to work with. But there is good football to be had there with him.
I think so. I mean, I know the repetition of something can be pretty bad over a long period of time, but we've gone from a team that doesn't have any kind of system of attack, any kind of phases of play. So I think short term definitely would be a huge benefit for us. I'm fully on board, but then like Nathan says, I can fully recognise why Spurs probably won't employ him. So I'd like to see an Italian manager at Tottenham. Brilliant, man. Absolutely brilliant.
So I go back to the chairman's message that came out pre Leicester match. Let me read you this section from it. We shall focus on the recruitment of a new head coach. We are acutely aware of the need to select someone whose values reflect those of our great club and return to playing football with the style for which we are known, free-flowing, attacking and entertaining, whilst continuing to embrace our desire to see young players flourish from our academy alongside experienced talent. And that just doesn't make me think of Conte. I just don't think he's necessarily compatible with that. I get that, like, Chelsea certainly under Conte played some nice football at times, But I wouldn't say it was like free-flowing football. Like you say, Nathan, it was methodical, robotic, and yet, you know, easy on the eye in a robotic way. A bit like Man City are in a sense, but perhaps even less room for inventiveness than Man City. So I'm just not sure how compatible he is. So I was quite surprised by the link. But I agree. I mean, for a couple of seasons, he would not be the worst appointment in the world by any stretch. He's clearly a good manager.
Yeah, I mean, you're right with City. But asphyxiate games, they strangle teams, and just if you watch City, it's exactly the same repetition of movement each time. And then occasionally De Bruyne has a bit of brilliance, who's can able to switch something. But City can be pretty one dimensional. We saw that in the Champions League, that when Chelsea just blocked off the gaps, they had no idea what they were doing. It was like watching Tottenham against Harry Redknapp's Tottenham against Wigan back in the day. They didn't know what to do, and that's what happens at the top level football. But I think Conte would definitely get us working efficiently enough to be pretty good. You know, I think.
What would he do with our defence, Bardi?
I don't know.
Bury them under the stadium.
Yeah, part of me thinks maybe he'll be able to do something with Dier. I mean, he made David Luiz look like a pretty good defender in that season. They won the league, and they pulled Azpilicueta into a back three, I think, as well. And I can't remember who the third one was. Was it Cahill? I'm not sure. I can't remember now. But I think if you can get Tottenham... So when we were low block and counter under Mourinho, we had a defensive style, and Dier kind of looked okay with that. And even though I dislike Dier, I still think if you've got a coach who can just manage the player, because physically Dier does have it, he's just a bit stupid. But if you can coach him to be better and to understand and be aware of his space, then perhaps there can be a defender in there. Maybe Conte's that guy to do that, because he has experience working with some fantastic players. What he's done with Bastoni has been great. Skriniar looks like a solid player, and he's worked with some of the best centre backs there are: Bonucci, Chiellini, Barzagli, those kind of guys. So yeah, I have faith that perhaps he could coach something into Dial.
And Nathan, what about some of the other manager links left on the list? If we don't end up with Poch, where are you at now with who's left?
Well, I've got a couple of videos for you on Great Imposter and Eric Ten Hag. Have you watched them both?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any specific questions about either of those managers?
I mean, I just love Graham Potter.
Yeah, I know you do.
I just love him as a person and as a coach. Don't get me wrong. I'm very, very much all in on Poch coming back, but Potter is a fine second choice as far as I'm concerned. I think he would do an excellent job with our squad. I really do. I think he will make us play exciting football, but exciting football with patterns and possessional structures. And I think we could have a midfield again, which would be nice. And I just feel like his style meshes well with the players we already have at our disposal, whereas I'm not sure that's necessarily the case with Conte.
I mean, whatever happens, the manager will be announced tomorrow. It will be announced tomorrow. It has to be, because...
Really? Do you think?
I mean, season ticket renewals are the third. And
oh, right, okay.
Part of the month, and people are not... You can't have... It's not Glastonbury Festival, where you just buy a ticket without even knowing who's headlining. It's Tottenham Hotspur. We kind of need to know who's going to be playing the pyramid stage, and we don't know at the moment. And I haven't renewed, and there's plenty of other people who are waiting to see who will be cheering, because I don't want to renew, then all of a sudden Steve Bruce is in charge.
Interesting.
I think it'll be tomorrow, because we'll have just got out a podcast in time discussing some various managerial options.
Yeah.
But that's where you're going with that. I'm just having a look at the latest odds. You've got Lopetegui, you've got Rodgers, who we talked about, a decent manager, a slightly dislikable guy. Not even dislikable, like he's fine. He's just like, he's kind of cringy. He's a bit of a cringe lord. And also, again, just like sort of unimaginative. Acquisition, because he's just like a guy who's been around the Premier League and done all right, you know, done more than all right, done well, but still. Christophe Galtier, who like has just won Ligue 1, but like he's very Mourinho in style. If you look at the underlying numbers for Ligue 1, Lille place like fourth or fifth. I think they got pretty lucky with their finishing. I don't. Maybe like, did I already say this? If I lost my mind, maybe I said this in the Discord chat that Lille's last season is like the best possible version of what could have happened under Mourinho, in which he has two really good box defenders, and they continue to be sort of overly fruitful on the counterattack for the entirety of the season. And I do think that Lille were probably better in possession than we were quite a bit. So not an inspiring link there, to be honest. I think he's going to Nice. He's meant to be going to Nice anyway. So and then below him is Jurgen Klinsmann.
Okay, that's enough manager chat, isn't it? If you start mentioning the name Jurgen Klinsmann in connection to the manager's job, it's time to move on.
One final point I want to make is I want to refer back to the Discord poll that we had, and down below other has one vote. On zero votes is Roberto Martinez.
Wow, that would be worse. I would not renew.
Yeah, I mean that's the correct. Well done, Discord. You've all done very well there.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So we're going to rattle through some questions. Firstly, actually, I wanted to just touch on a response to our discussion about Harry Kane last time from Luke Wayne, who sent a couple of emails. Luke says, I agree with the notion that Kane, as England captain and basically leading man of Tottenham, a highly multicultural area of London with severe economic deprivation, that he could and should speak up on matters. He is a very well media-trained footballer, often repeating the same lines in pre- and post-match interviews. But the one time we were privy to Kane, the person, not the footballer, was the birth of his first or second child, and he congratulated and celebrated his wife giving birth without painkillers. He was attacked online for his celebration of his wife's strength during childbirth as misogynistic and worse, so he clarified his comments, and I think from then on he made a very conscious decision to be Kane the professional footballer rather than Kane the man, as he witnessed firsthand the ridicule he would get as Kane the man / person. I didn't know about that, actually. That's the first time I've heard that, but it absolutely makes sense, you know, for in terms of self-preservation of his brand. It's not what I'd want to see, but I understand why he's doing it. He wants to make as much money as possible during his career, so he avoids any controversy. The second point that Luke makes, and other people have made elsewhere online, is on the Kane and we need to be men debate, which I think is important in wider society, is somewhat misinterpreted here. I agree saying we need to be men in the gendered stereotype isn't helpful and proven false in a multitude of instances. I'm actually writing about Soviet Russian women of the 1920s and their invalidation by the state, which is probably why this has sparked something within me. I think in this instance, it's not unreasonable for Kane to reference in this situation needing to be men. He plays in a sport that is divided by sex. We have men and women's football, which is why if he was Harriet Kane playing women's football, then he'd say we need to be women about situation X. I think Kane refers to being men in the sense that the players needed to be adults responsible for their performances in this instance and their training. This is where I have some sympathy for Mourinho in the Delhi case, because he was called out for poor training standards, and Kane referenced teammates not really putting their weight in matches and not taking responsibility on the pitch. Not excusing poor tactics here, though, on many instances. Delhi recently tweeted, "Happiest with the ball at my feet," a clear dig at Mourinho, but Delhi failed to take responsibility for his own performances that dipped, and just because he is best, clearly for all to see, with the ball at his feet, doesn't mean he can give up trying or not take responsibility for his training and performance standards. Luke adds in brackets, honestly, it's where my Mourinho sympathy ends, because it was a shit show. And I thought they were good points that Luke made. I would take issue with the adults thing, because I honestly think if he meant adults, he'd have said adults or grown-ups. I mean, it was a choice to use men. But as I think I said on the podcast, I don't think that's Kane saying that. I think he's just parroting what Mourinho said. I honestly think he's literally just, he's repeating a phrase he's heard over and over again in the dressing room. And also, like, just be better in your choice of language. We're trying for a more inclusive sport here, and it's not helpful. But also, like, there is a wider discussion there, I think, about if Kane thinks the issue, the sole issue, is that they just weren't adult enough in taking responsibility. Like, I think he's missing the point of why Spurs failed so much. It's not like if everyone had just been a bit more responsible, we'd have been fine. I really strongly disagree with that. I mean, maybe that would have led to what Nathan said before, Mourinho having the most perfect possible season like Gauthier did at Lille. But I think it's highly unlikely. I think there were many other flaws. And for Kane not to recognise that, I think is fairly typical of Harry Kane from what I've seen. But really good points and points well made from Luke, I think. Any thoughts, either of you?
I thought you made some good points. It's good to have a serious and adult conversation about it rather than just the usual stuff that happens on Twitter. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you, Windy. I accept everything said in the first section on the topic of using the word men to mean adults. I've heard this argument a few times. It's been made a few times on this topic, and I don't really see it. Maybe I've just completely missed it, but I'd never heard a female footballer say we need to be women in place of we need to be adults. Even if you just slide the word grown in there before men, grown men, grown women, I think that changes things quite a lot. But
sure.
Using men to mean adults just doesn't seem quite honest. But I want to let go of this topic now.
Yeah, fair. Yeah. Completely fair. We've done it to death. We've really done it to death. What's Nathan's season review?
Are you ready? You want my season review?
Yep.
Nathan's season review, here it comes. It was bad.
Join the Patreon for more great.
There's literally no point doing a season review podcast. In many ways, we've been reviewing the season throughout the year, week by week, so I don't think we need to do a roundup, to be honest.
Like Nicky Bandini does in the Guardian, the Bandinis. I might do the Bardinis, and we'll do some alternate awards in the next.
Oh,
nice!
I like that.
Let's try and
like
find
that.
A little bit of joy in the season that was, and I'll reach out to people for nominations.
That's a brilliant idea.
The Bardinis totally ripped it off. Who cares? Mine now.
Whilst we're doing sort of corrections and follow-ups, Bardi, I thought this was a really useful point from James Allnut, who says, just a point on Eric Dier. I don't think his decline is quite as miraculous as Bardi makes out. It happened immediately following his operation for appendicitis. Mm-hmm. I think Dier said in an interview how tough it was to recover from that operation as he kept getting ill over and over again. Must have wrecked him as a player, worth noting maybe. And I thought that was a really well-made point.
Unless your appendicitis is where all your football talent resides. I'm going to disagree with that.
No, but
really,
we've gone back and we've looked at Eric Dier a few years ago, and he really does look like a better player. I just think that, like, it's not that appendicitis directly has like undermined his core strength or whatever, but like just that time out from professional football, from elite football, has just thrown him off. And hey, maybe in 2 years' time or whatever, he'll have put things back together. But we can't hope on that. We have to assume that he's just taken some permanent damage from the time he was out ill, and I have some sympathy for him, to be honest.
He remains a mid-level Premier League player, which is a fantastic level. Like, if you're looking at it, but he's just, yeah, I don't think he's the centre back to drive us forward.
He's on holiday with Ryan Mason and Harry Kane right now. Mm-hmm. Did you see the photo of the lads?
I saw it
next to their private jet. Yeah, I mean, he just looked like, oh, bless him. Yeah, he just didn't seem to fit in the photo. But yeah, I do really like off-field Eric Dier, I must say. I have a lot of admiration for him as a person.
Yep. Yes.
I will genuinely be really sad when he moves on. Brian Edgecombe says, not sure the best way to put this, but I'm curious about your thoughts on the impacts that transfers have on the teams and maybe more specifically players. For example, most fans seem convinced that we should sell Aurier and Sissoko, but those are Tongi's two best friends at the club. How is this going to impact him? What are the impacts of selling Gazzaniga and Lamela on Lo Celso? Eric Dier is well liked in the dressing room and connects with different groups, so how does selling him impact the team? Not sure if this is something Alex would have an opinion on, so he's referring to Alex, the sports psychologist Alex Stoyle, who we've had on a couple of times, who's brilliant. I think it's a worthwhile point. Like, I think there's a real thing there around connections in the dressing room, but I don't think it's impossible to regroup from selling players. It does definitely seem like Aurier and Sissoko are on their way out this summer. Aurier has basically said he's leaving, and Sissoko's come as near as damn it to saying he's leaving. He's referenced new challenges recently. It seems likely that he will leave. And yeah, I'm sure that will have an impact on Tongi and Ndombele, who is close with those two players. But like he'll find another clan within the dressing room, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, this has been a good podcast because I can keep talking about Italy. But I was thinking about these kind of signing players to keep players happy. And obviously in the mid-80s, late 90s, there was a rule in Italy, you couldn't have more than three non-Italian players in your team. So what you would find is a club would go out and just sign a couple of Germans or a couple of Dutchmen or three Dutchmen. And they would do that to help that one non-Italian kind of settle in. Juventus had the two Russians. Roma went through a variety of Germans to help keep Rudi Voller happy. You had the Matthias Klings with Bremer, Inter, Dutch guys I mentioned. And it was a common ploy, just because even Tottenham have done it. We signed Ozzy Ardiles, and then we signed Ricky Villa as well, just because he was probably cheap and Ozzy liked him. But it's a common thing to do it, because we quite often talk about the right player and play. Not every transfer works. You can sign the greatest player in the world. Man United could sign Forlan, and he's terrible. Then he goes to Spain and he does amazing things. He goes to the World Cup and scores loads of goals. And that's just... We forget that they're human beings, and human beings need friends to help them blossom. So I think there is something in that. You've got to think who you're signing and how they will settle in. And it's all about building a squad mentality that players will work and flourish in.
Any thoughts, Nathan?
It's probably something that we don't acknowledge enough when we talk about players on this podcast. It's definitely something that we do as a club. Like, we've gone through our Croatian era, our French era, our Argentine era, and stuff like that. So it's clearly something that's thought about at the club. We don't really talk about it that much. But I think that, like, the part of the reason that I feel that way is that, like, build those relationships with the players while they're at the club, you know, do your pre-season team building stuff, do good ones, don't do naff ones. You know, get Levy out of the room when you're trying to bond team members. You're singing, you have to, you know, the typical player standing on a stage doing some karaoke when they first sign, all that kind of good stuff. And just try to foster the opportunity to build a relationship, because, like, while there are definite strengths, like Tanguy arrives at the club and he knows Sissoko and Oria, and they share a common language and they can get on their friends, there's also sort of a cliquey element to that. Mm-hmm. And really, mm-hmm. you want him to develop relationships with Højbjerg and Lo Celso and Dele, and you want to get things going that way. So I think there is a small downside to those sort of national identities as a connection, but I think they can be helpful, but I also think just build good relationships within the team, you know, and do everything you can as a club, as a manager, as a member of staff, as a player to make that happen.
Just thinking of Icardi and Maxi Lopez.
Jesus, yeah.
Having signed two Argentinians, and he settled into his house and tried to build good relationships that way, and one ended up stealing the other one's wife, and yeah, getting tattoos of Maxi Lopez's children on his body. Yeah. Sometimes it can go too far. You can be too friendly.
I tell you who are getting on very well, and that is Roden and Bale. Oh my goodness, those two have some chemistry. Every time they are on screen together for the Spurs media bits, they are absolutely hilarious. They're just really naturally funny together, and you can tell they're very close friends. Bale references in the most recent video that he's actual best friend is Wayne Hennessy. I have a few raised eyebrows about that. But Roden seems like a decent character, and they both seem to get on very well. So the Welsh Mafia is the new Croatian Mafia, the new Argentine Mafia. Last question before we wrap up, because we've got some other fun stuff to do, which I'll touch on in a second. This is from Jake Sandler, who is pleading with us. Please stop rating our bad players. It's a huge issue, because your acceptance of mediocrity leads to 10 other people's acceptance of mediocrity. It spreads like a plague, no different to COVID-19. It's fine for you to have an opinion, but here's mine. I've no doubt that Oliver Skip will be just like Harry Winks, obsessed with by our younger fans because he's English and one of our own, when in fact he's not very good. Reguilon is god-awful. Stop saying he's a really good player. Tanganga is not good enough. Stop saying we've got a player there. Like I said, the thing is your podcast, not mine, but stop accepting so many poor players. It's enough already.
there's a lot to take in there.
I think Reguilon's brilliant. I mean, I really do. He played terribly at the end of the season, but he's a good player playing badly. When he gets some structure, when he gets some instructions, I think we're going to see an absolute star in Reguilon.
I completely agree, of course. But I think there's a larger issue here. Jake, I think that you have... you're putting sort of too much responsibility on your own opinion, and you seem to be making out, and applying it to us as well, and you might think that it's more of a case for us, but we really are just podcasters who a few people listen to. We have no sway over the fan base, all right? So how you feel about a player, if you set high standards, and what you've done here by making out that Reguilon is god-awful is set absurdly high standards, that won't make the club and the players meet those standards. That will just make you feel badly about them. You just need to chill out, mate. I don't really know what else to say. Like, it's there are underperformers in our squad for sure, and if you have issues with if you think Tanganga's not going to make the grade, I don't think that, like, that you're definitely wrong there, but I think that you're applying a demand on players that aren't aware of your existence and aren't aware of our existences, and we can't use the setting of extremely high standards to make them better. All we're going to do is frustrate ourselves with how we feel about the squad.
Well said. Yeah. None of us know, ultimately. We just got to watch and see what happens. And we all judge players in different ways. I have this conversation quite often that we all look for different things in players. So what I like in a right back might be different to what Bardi likes in a right back, what Nathan likes in a right back. What I like in a central midfielder is definitely different to what Bardi likes in a central midfielder. What I want a centre-back to be, I assume, is different. So we're all looking for slightly different attributes in our players. You scale that up, and like if you rate players based on those attributes and then scale it up across that player as a whole, then yeah, you're going to get differences of opinion, and I think that's fine. Like, it's fine to think Reguilon's awful. If you think Reguilon's awful, crack on and think Reguilon's awful, but you're not going to, like, make us not think he's good because you say he's awful. Like, I have watched Reguilon in every game he's played and every minute he's played for Spurs, and I think he's good. So I'm not going to just go, oh, no, you're right, Reguilon is awful, isn't he? So it's like, people have got their opinions. I think the key is to be open-minded, to watch players as objectively as you can, and if they have a patch of bad form, don't assume that they're suddenly a bad player now. I think in many ways you need to focus on when they've been good and think, how do we get that player back to that? And that's the starting point.
Yeah, I mean, football's been going 150 years, and the reason why it's been going so long, professionally anyway, the reason why it's been going so long is because everybody sees it differently. Everybody takes different things from it. It's a sport entertainment, and people see what they want to see and they take what they want to take from it. There is no kind of uniform opinion on one player. Reguilon occasionally is god awful. Reguilon is occasionally brilliant, but he's a human being. These aren't characters on FIFA which will play a certain level. They're not controlled by AI. We spoke about AI at the beginning. They're not controlled by AI. They will constantly hit 7.5 and above. It's just not like that in any walk of life. Someday you can bake a bread and it's great. The next day it doesn't do shit. Footballers are like that. One day Harry Kane will be crap, but that doesn't mean that Harry Kane was always crap. And that, my friend, is life. One day you are beautiful, the next day you're old and ugly. And that's how it goes.
You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.